This is the Andy Pollin Hour. On Washington's new home for sports, ESPN 630, the sports capital.
We have 2 hours today with Tony Kornheiser off, though in just a few minutes you'll hear Tony's thoughts on Aaron Rodgers' news conference from yesterday. The breaking news is that American Sunisa Lee has won the all-around gold in women's gymnastics. That was the event that Simone Biles was supposed to participate in, but pulled out because of mental health issues. So we won gold anyway in that event, but Simone Biles remains the number one story of the Olympics. And coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll talk to Amber Theo Harris, who you may remember covered the Orioles for Comcast. She was the dugout reporter for them for several years. She did sports on Channel 4 here. She worked for the NFL Network. And she produced a year ago a documentary for HBO, which was called The Weight of Gold. And she co-produced it with Michael Phelps, who also narrated it. And it was all about mental health issues facing athletes. So they were way ahead of the curve on this. It was supposed to come out when the Olympics were going on. And of course, the Olympics were postponed a year because of COVID. But a year ago today, as a matter of fact, it debuted on HBO. So we'll talk to Amber about that coming up at 11 o'clock and her thoughts on what's going on with Simone Biles and other athletes in the Olympics who are facing mental health challenges. Also, Scott Abraham is going to join me from training camp coming up in about 20 minutes as he is in Virginia there to watch what's going on, and will tell us what he sees and what's different. It's first time they've been there in 2 years, and we'll see what Richmond is showing everybody at this point, what he's seen so far in the one practice that they've had. And also we'll talk about the COVID situation, which all ties into what could be an incredible 30 hours for Washington, D.C. sports. By the time the baseball trade deadline rolls around at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, so, right, that's about 30 hours, if my math is right, I think, we'll know whether Max Scherzer is still here, which is highly doubtful, or where he's going to go. And speculation is he's going to go to a West Coast team, and it's either going to be the Giants, the Dodgers, or the Padres. We'll have to see. But the speculation from reading the tweets of those who covered the team say that it's likely to happen today. And look, the Nats are supposed to play a doubleheader against the Phillies starting at noon today, and Scherzer is one of the scheduled pitchers. I don't think there's any chance he's going to pitch, but an announcement's going to have to be made prior to the game. Also, we don't even know, here we are 2 hours before first pitch, whether the games are going to be played, because you have to have those follow-up COVID tests, and we have to find out if there are any more positives and whether or not they can actually put a team on the field. Now, there are four players, according to Davey Martinez, who have tested positive, including Trey Turner, who was pulled from the game on Tuesday night. And he was very evasive as to whether or not Turner had the vaccine. Davey said that three of the four had it. And then when he was pressed on Turner, let me get you the wording here from this story, asked about whether Turner is vaccinated, Martinez said he couldn't comment on the matter. Yet when Eric Fetty tested positive this spring, the Nationals immediately clarified that he had been vaccinated. So it does sound like Trey Turner is patient zero on all of this. And they've had eight staffers who were also testing positive. Not as big a deal for the on-the-field situation, but certainly I imagine it involves a coach or two and people working behind the scenes and all the people that are necessary to put a game together and a team on the field. So we'll keep an eye on that. Also, you got the NBA draft tonight, and the Wizards are picking 15th. I don't think you're going to be blown away with anybody they take. A couple of names being thrown around, Trey Murphy from Virginia, and if he falls that far, Corey Kispert, who played for Gonzaga, got them to the national championship game. He could still be there at 15. But the bigger story is Bradley Beal. And there was a report that Beal was mulling whether or not he was going to ask for a trade. That came out over the weekend. Yesterday, Tommy Shepard, the GM of the Wizards, said no, he has not asked for a trade. He has not asked to be traded. Didn't say whether or not they would definitely not trade him, and I don't think they can do that at this point, given that they may get all kinds of crazy offers at the last minute. But it is possible that Bradley Beal and Max Scherzer could be both on their way out of town by the end of the day today. Who knows on that? And then the other thing to keep an eye on, and this could be incredibly altering for the Washington football team, they have the lowest vaccination rate in the NFL. And we've already seen what's happening around the league with Lamar Jackson having to leave practice yesterday for the Ravens after testing positive. If there's an outbreak on the football team, watch out. And hopefully players will get the message that you need to get the vaccine. If nothing else, for the safety of your life. This is not a political thing. This is fact. Anthony Fauci said yesterday that 95% of the people who have died have not been vaccinated. 5% who have passed away have had the vaccine. So the overwhelming evidence is there for self-preservation, if nothing else. And if you don't care about your teammates and you don't care about your coach, who's immune compromised after suffering from cancer last year, care about yourself, you know, save yourself. Terry McLaurin, one of the captains, was asked about it yesterday, and he was very diplomatic about it. He said, I've had the vaccine, but it's a personal choice. Yeah, it's a personal choice, but it's a choice that you need to make. You need to do that as a member of the football team. And anybody who's on the bubble of making the team, it's not going to help your chances. Because even if you have talent that the team thinks they might be able to develop, they can't take a chance on you. They can't take a chance on you infecting the rest of the team. All right, let's get to the number one story in sports, and that is Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers yesterday delivered something at a news conference, which in over 40 years of talking about sports on the radio, I have never seen. Most news conferences are bland. Most players are evasive on major issues. Very few times do you see them be open and honest. And what you got from Aaron Rodgers yesterday was the opening of the veins and bleeding. He told you everything. His first answer to the first question, which was essentially, you know, what the hell's going on here, he went 5 minutes and 41 seconds. I'm not going to play the whole thing for you, but I want to play some of what he said and some of the react yesterday, including what Tony said on PTI. So this, I think, was the most important thing he said yesterday, where he said, look, I've been here for 16 years. I would like to have some input on who we bring in, particularly free agents.
Wanting to be a part of conversations involving free agents, which has never happened in my career. You know, I've trained with a number of NFL guys most of my career in the off seasons. My agency at the first has had a number of high draft picks over the years. I've tried to pass along information. Hasn't really been used, shall we say. So I wanted to offer my services as a recruiter, you know. And I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward.
So the key point there is Green Bay is bitter. It's cold. It's in the middle of nowhere. You're not going to Miami. You're not going to Los Angeles. You're not going to the glitterati of Dallas. You are going to Green Bay. Why are you going to Green Bay? To play with Aaron Rodgers. So if you're going to play with Aaron Rodgers, wouldn't you want Aaron Rodgers to be involved in the recruiting process? And he said, basically got the door slammed in his face on that. The other thing, and this is something you can do if you have stature. If you don't have stature, they don't like this when you do this, but he was very critical of who they let go and how they let him go.
I wanted to help the organization maybe learn from them some of the mistakes in the past, in my opinion, about the way that some of the outgoing veterans were treated, and just the fact that we didn't retain a number of players that I felt like were core players to our foundation, our locker room, high character guys. I'm talking about Charles Woodson, Jordy Nelson, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb, James Jones, John Kuhn, Brett Goode, TJ Lang, Brian Bulaga, Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, guys who were, you know, exceptional players for us, but great locker room guys, high character guys. Many of them who weren't offered a contract at all, or were extremely lowballed, or were, you know, maybe in my opinion, not given the respect on the way out that guys of their status and stature and high character deserved.
Well, two things on that. One, veteran players never want to see fellow veteran players go. They develop friendships with them. Sometimes their families become close. it's a natural progression of things if you've been around for a long time. And an organization, while they can get input from a player on that, they can't stand on that kind of sentiment. Again, the old quote from Branch Rickey, which goes back, you know, 60 or 70 years, it's always better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. And look at the New England Patriots. This is how Bill Belichick has done business forever. He may have a guy who has some tread left on the tire. Sorry, it's got to go. Make room for somebody else. You could even make that case for Tom Brady. You know, they looked at Brady after 21 years, and, well, as it turned out, he was good enough to win a Super Bowl for another team, but they determined that it wasn't going to happen for them in New England, and they allowed him to get away. Now, Brady did some things to make sure that happened. He turned down a contract extension to make himself a free agent and so forth and so on. But you cannot run a business where you're holding on because of sentiment, because of what he did in the past. It's what he can do for you in the future, and that's why they did this. Also, Brian Gutekunst this morning, in just the last hour or so, addressed that and said, well, we handled things with class when we let players go, kind of defending himself. We'll see if there's a comeback from Rodgers on that later today. I kind of doubt that. All right, react from the people who covered the team and from the pundits on this. First, Adam Schefter, who did a lot of the reporting on this. He was the one that broke the story on draft day that Aaron Rodgers wanted out of Green Bay. This was his reaction to hearing the news conference.
Aaron Rodgers unfiltered. Aaron Rodgers as transparent as can be. Aaron Rodgers spelling out exactly what has troubled him, what he went through, how he considered retirement, how he considered a number of options, what he felt of the moves the Packers have made over time, not including him in the process, the players that they got rid of. He named names going back to Charles Woodson being released. Clearly, this has been something that has bothered him for a long time. And you could see the wide range of emotions that he felt throughout the course of the offseason. And then, of course, when he addressed his future, he didn't know much beyond this particular year because nobody knows beyond this particular year. But we do know that Aaron Rodgers is going to have the ability to dictate where he's going to go. If he wants to stay in Green Bay after this year, he'll have the power to do that. If he wants to retire, he'll be able to do that and not have to pay back money, unlike this year. If he wants to be traded, he can help dictate a trade out of Green Bay.
And one thing Gutekunst said today as well, that while Rodgers may be able to renegotiate the 3 years that would remain on his contract after this year, he would not be able to get out necessarily after 1 year. And everything that Rodgers said yesterday indicated that he doesn't have the control and the power that some reported that he did. He was just airing his feelings and airing the grievances. It was Festivus in July, really, is what it came down to yesterday. Now, this was Tony Kornheiser, who, as you know, has attended many, many news conferences over the years as a sports writer in New York and Washington, and now comments on these things, PTI, and here on ESPN 630. This was his take working with Pablo Torre yesterday in for Wilbon on PTI.
I'm going to concentrate right now on what a wow it was to see Aaron yes. Rodgers and hear Aaron Rodgers say these things. I did not expect this at all. I thought he would be typically coy and mysterious and hazy and sort of superior, and he was not. And I took notes on this, okay? He was specific, he was angry, he was methodical. And Pablo, this was the pain of years. This wasn't just, as he said, a draft day decision a couple of years ago. I mean... He sat there and he said, I'm quoting now, Green Bay is not a vacation spot. People are coming here to play with me. And he said, I offered to help recruit them, and the Packers didn't want any part of this. He listed these guys name by name by name that he mm-hmm. thought the Packers dealt with in a shabby manner. And he knew as he was doing this that he was speaking directly to the coach and the general manager and the president of that team. And he made it very clear he hated them. And I have to tell you, Pablo, and thank you for saying this, as someone myself driven by spite and anger my whole life, I thought he was a working class hero, and I wanted to sit there and applaud. I did. Yeah. I think he directed his comments at his teammates. His teammates have to love him. That is his constituency. Mm. He said, I'm labor. I'm not management. I don't care about their money. I thought he was playing to teammates gone and teammates present. I thought that I thought he won the locker room. And I think for a player in any sport, that's the most important thing. I don't think a player can say of Aaron Rodgers, oh, he thinks because he makes all this money, he's better than us. I didn't get that sense at all. I mean, I think honestly that players, particularly in football, they want to say these things. They want to say management thinks they can pay us and then treat us shabbily, and they're afraid. Aaron Rodgers is not afraid.
Okay, so that's Tony's take. He's been in locker rooms but has not been in a locker room as a player. It's Tim Hasselbeck essentially seconding what Tony said, but remember, Hasselbeck has experience in the locker room. He had an NFL career that lasted 4 or 5 years. He made a handful of starts here for Washington, played for the Giants, Eagles, a couple of other teams. You know, journeyman guy, various locker rooms around the NFL, and this was his look at what Rodgers said.
I think guys are going to like it in the locker room, especially older guys and guys that maybe have been with the team for a while and are uncertain about their contract. There's a number of players, and Aaron referenced it, guys in the last year of their deals. I think, you know, there'll be guys that are just wondering what it would be like for them on their way out. Players love when star players, you know, kind of stick up for them. And it seemed like Aaron was doing a lot of that today. I mean, talking about guys like Charles Woodson, who hasn't been with the team, you know, in close to a decade, you know, guys like that. So I really think that in many respects, guys in the locker room are going to like the way Aaron is kind of sticking up for players.
Yeah. Now, there's one other angle on this, and that's Tim Hasselbeck again. One other angle, and that's the fans, who we haven't heard from on this. We heard from the player. We've heard from management. We've heard from reporters. We've heard from columnists, pundits, all those people. We have not heard from the fans. And from what I was hearing from the talk show hosts that were on ESPN 630 this morning from out of town in the Milwaukee and Green Bay area, the fans are not necessarily 100% behind Aaron Rodgers. And I think partly because they're spoiled that they've come to expect to have a franchise quarterback, which they've had for 30 years. However, realize this, even with the incredible success that they had from Brett Favre and now Aaron Rodgers dating back to 1992, so it's almost 30 years, they have two Super Bowls. Look, we'd love to have two Super Bowls here in Washington, no question about it. But they've had the elite quarterback. They've had the missing piece that every team is after, and they have two Super Bowl championships. If you want to compare that to the last back-to-back Hall of Fame duo, which was Joe Montana followed by Steve Young, that was a 20-year period from 1978 to 1999, 21 years, and they produced five. Montana had four. Young had one. And you might say, if you're a Green Bay fan, yeah, this has all been great, but, you know, maybe if we had somebody else, we'd have won more Super Bowls. I don't know. I think that'd be very greedy, especially coming from here, where we can only dream of the Super Bowls that happened decades and decades ago. But that might be the view, and they may be spoiled, and they may be saying, you know, Aaron, you want to be petulant? Fine. We'll go find somebody else. They did when Brett Favre left. And maybe Jordan Love is the next guy. Maybe he's next in line, and maybe he's the next in the Hall of Fame string. Who knows? But that's all we're going to do on Aaron Rodgers today. That's enough. We got another couple hours to do some other things, including what's happening with the Washington football team, and we'll head to Richmond next to talk to Scott Abraham of Channel 7, and he'll give us the latest. Don't go away. In for Tony today as well from 11 to 12. Scott Abraham covers sports for Channel 7, ABC 7 in Washington. He's one of the few full-time guys left doing this, and he is in Richmond for training camp, where they haven't been for 2 years, and for the last year or so, everything has been done by Zoom, either in Scott's home or at Channel 7. Now he's actually on the scene. What does it feel like to be doing your job in the way it was intended to be done?
Andy, always good to be on the show with you. Yeah, it feels good to have some sort of normalcy. You know, there are still COVID protocols in place, especially with the fans. No selfies, you know, no autographs, but it's good to kind of be so close to Chase Young and the Ryan Fitzpatricks and to see these guys in person again. I know it's still, you know, in a sense that Delta variant out there and COVID-19 is still an issue. Hopefully we're not trending backwards and we'll continue this trend during this whole football season and be done with Zoom. But It's great to be back, Andy.
And the fans are back. Bram sent out some video yesterday on social media, big lines of people. Do you know the limits of the crowds? Do you know how many people are able to watch practice?
Yeah, that is a good question. I asked a couple of members of Washington football team PR, and they didn't have the answer to me. They tried to get me to corporate PR, but they never got back to me. It's a scaled-down version because of just the social distancing and the capacity. It's definitely not, enrichment of years past just because of the virus and this COVID-19 protocols. But there's still a good crowd with a lot of smiles, energy, enthusiasm. And I tell everybody that there's a sense of hope because this team is coming off a division title, a playoff appearance. They got some really strong young talent on this football team. And you add in a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick, a lot of excitement for this football team this year, Andy.
Yeah, no question. The thing about that I read was there was something like a 20-foot barrier that had to be between players and fans. So no autographs this year, is that right?
Yep, there's no autographs. And they actually set up an interactive tent where – a select number of fans each day can go in the tent and participate in their own press conference. So yesterday they brought in Terry McLaurin and on a Zoom virtual press conference, and the fans could take 5 minutes and ask him questions. So that's a neat little thing they added this year because of the COVID restrictions. Because normally the fans can get those autographs and get those selfies. So a little bit better.
All right, the vaccination rate is the big story that has come with training camp, and it was addressed day one by Ron Rivera, who pulled no punches and said he's beyond frustrated with their rate, which is reportedly 60%, where the league average is 85%. I saw some of what Terry McLaurin said yesterday, that he is vaccinated, but it's a personal choice. What's your sense of the fear factor of the players, and how many of them, and I know it's not required anymore, but how many of them do you see wearing masks?
There's several masks. Now, I want to preface this by saying that doesn't mean they're not vaccinated. So, like Chase Young, Montez Sweat, several others, they are wearing masks when they come out on the field and they take them off. Again, you can't assume that they're vaccinated or not vaccinated, but I think this is going to be a storyline the entire season. And obviously, Washington did a great job last year. They were one of the lowest in the league in terms of how many positive cases they had during the year. And Ron has to find that balance of, hey, it's their body. They can put whatever they want in their body, but also he understands it's a competitive advantage to get that 85% threshold in terms of, instead of the virtual meetings and the working out together and the eating together, building that team chemistry. And Terry McLaurin and all the players are saying the right things, clearly, but I don't think when it comes down to, let's say, a game gets postponed or canceled, then you might be hearing a different tune because that means their paychecks are getting taken away. That means food on the table for their families getting taken away. So I can't tell any tension or conflict within the players, so early on in the process. But if a game gets canceled and there's outbreak, then obviously that'll be a different tune when money gets getting taken out of their wallet.
No question. And I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop because we already saw just up the road Lamar Jackson taken out of practice yesterday, and he had COVID last year, missed a game, and with the vaccination rate as low as it is, I mean, it does seem almost unavoidable that they're going to be more. And in fact, aren't there even a couple of players who are not even practicing because they have tested positive?
Correct. There's a couple of players on the COVID list. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but there are, I believe, two players that are on the COVID list. And obviously, there's a couple of other players out because of injury. Curtis Samuel still nursing that groin. But all in all the major players other than Curtis Samuel have been on the field practicing, and they're healthy early going as they should be healthy. And hopefully there's no big injuries, and it's great to see Landon Collins coming back from that Achilles injury so quickly on the field, moving around and looking good.
Yeah, he was out. That's an injury that used to take a year plus, and now he's back after 9 months, which is a testament to modern science. We're talking to Scott Abraham of Channel 7. He's at training camp with Washington in Richmond. It's an odd way to say it now. I'll probably never get used to saying that. You always say the nickname of the team, which you're going to have to wait a while for. But he is there. And I'll ask you this. The last time you were there, they were named the Redskins. They had another coach. They were in the midst of misery. Just a little compare and contrast what it was like to be in Richmond 2 years ago with the on-the-field product versus what you've seen in day one of practice and now into day two.
you know, Andy, for the last several years, it seems like there's a dark cloud always over this franchise. And what's next? What's going to happen next? What conflict? What big storyline is going to happen next? And I genuinely, you know, there's no BS here. I genuinely feel the excitement and the energy from this fan base in particular. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of optimism. And they trust Ron Rivera. They trust his type of integrity and the man he is of holding this locker room together. And they got a lot of good, mature players, young players on this roster to see if, you know, a Montez Sweat or Chase Young can rise up and take more of a leadership role. They bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been on several teams and been through the fires of the NFL. So the core is there. The pieces are there. My concern is this tough schedule they're going to be playing. It's not Cupcake City, because they're going to be playing some big boy football with the Bills, Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame quarterback. The defense will be tested. Fitzpatrick, you're going to get the good, the bad, the ugly. In terms of product on the field, Andy, I think this is one of the most talented rosters they've had in several years here in Washington, and there's no reason why they can't repeat as division champions.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot will depend, of course, on Dak Prescott and the Cowboys and whether Daniel Jones makes the next step and so forth. The Eagles look like they're in total rebuild. So, yeah, it looks like a three-team battle to get there, and it's probably going to take more than 7-9 to get there. Well, now you got 17 games, so it's probably going to take more than 8 wins to get there or whatever it is. But I look at this team, and it's amazing to me when you hear the people on ESPN who cover the NFL talk about them in the way that they do after only 1 year, that this could be the best defense in the NFL, and they're loaded with speed. Because last year, you know, we didn't know about the defense. You hoped that Chase Young was going to be good. They had some good young players, and you're adding to that, but you don't know about the secondary and the linebacking situation. That got a lot better during the year, and they've added to that, taking Jamin Davis in the first round. But the speed thing, you know, it was like Terry McLaurin and nobody else, and they have really rebuilt that very quickly. To be talking about them as one of the speedier teams in the league is really remarkable just 1 year later.
And they're really young, Andy. You look at that defense. Look at the defensive line. Look at the linebackers, adding in Jamin Davis in the secondary, and a Cam Curl and a William Jackson. They are young. They are versatile. And you mentioned speed, speed, speed. I'm really excited about those two defensive ends and Chase Young and Montez Sweat. They should just cause fits for offensive lines, which obviously will help the secondary for a William Jackson, for a Cam Curl to do some damage on the back end. And then you mentioned on the offensive side of the ball, speed fest as well. Players you can move all over the football field, versatility, a lot of weapons for Scott Turner, Antonio Gibson, and Curtis Samuel, Adam Humphries, and not to mention the rookie Diami Brown out of North Carolina. He's supposed to stretch the field. So, again, young, and speedy. It should be a recipe for success, but again, they're going to be tested because of that division, the tough schedule facing all that first place teams.
Quarterback battle. We've heard that there was going to be one, but all anybody's talking about is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Is it your feel that there is going to be a competition, or is it going to be Fitzpatrick's job to lose?
Ron says all the right things, obviously.
Yeah.
He learned his lesson from last year with anointing Dwayne Haskins.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to make that mistake twice. A little different player in terms of Haskins and Fitzpatrick. Young quarterback in Haskins, and Fitzpatrick knows how to carry himself in the NFL and in a locker room. So I think it's Fitzpatrick's job. He's gonna be starting week one. We'll see if he stays healthy. We'll see if we'll get the ugly and bad version of Fitzpatrick, where he has those 4 interception games or the 4 touchdown games. But also, don't forget about Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen, because a lot of people are forgetting about Kyle Allen. Remember, he was the guy that replaced Dwayne Haskins early on last year. So Kyle Allen working his way back from his injury that sidelined him last year. 3 very good quarterbacks, a good mix of youth and veteran presence. So I think it's Fitzpatrick's job to lose, but Rivera's saying all the right things early on.
Okay, so they practiced this morning. The two-a-days that you may remember from your youth, hearing about the players complain about two-a-days, they don't exist anymore. So they have a practice in the morning and a walkthrough in the afternoon, which is not that big a deal. But are you guys expecting in Richmond the thunderstorms that we're supposed to get here?
I haven't looked at radar, but every single day, Andy, since we've been down here since Monday, it's rained and stormed in the afternoon. Oh. It's that traditional afternoon thunderstorm with the heat and humidity in Richmond. So it's just expected at this point. But right now, it's hot, it's humid, and the sun is shining, and a lot of fans and the players are on the field right now.
Very good. It almost sounds normal, except for the fact you can't get autographs. But, you know, that's one of the things you have to deal with. Scott, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Andy, thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, that's Scott Abraham, who does excellent work for Channel 7. And as I say, there aren't many of them left. There was a time in this town where the local TV sportscaster was king. It was George Michael, Glenn Brenner, Frank Herzog. And even when there was a changing of the guard, there was always somebody who was the number one during the week and a weekend person. And Scott, I believe, is the only full-time weekday person there is. The other stations use some freelancers. And Channel 4, which, you know, had George Michael for all those years, they have the anchors read the sports. And congratulations to Scott for hanging in there. And he works very hard and does, I think, a very, very good job. Let me hit this hockey thing here for a second, what's going on with the Capitals. You know, I don't follow hockey as closely as I do the other sports, but is it possible they're like five goalies and all they do is shuffle them around? Because let's follow along with this. The Capitals made Vitek Vanecek available in the expansion draft last week to Seattle. Seattle claimed him. And there was a lot of hand-wringing. Oh, God, you know, we were counting on him to be our starting goalie. And the salary cap number is very friendly. He's making less than $1 million. What are we going to do here? And now he's coming back for a draft pick. Why is Seattle able to send him back to Washington? Why? Because Philip Grubauer is their new goalie. Wasn't Philip Grubauer here just 5 minutes ago? Seems that way. You know, where's Gump Worsley? You know, the number of goalies. Yeah, if you ask me to name goalies in the league, I couldn't go very deep on those. Also, Braden Holtby, who was the goalie for the Stanley Cup champion Capitals, he goes to Vancouver on a big deal, and they buy him out. They don't want him. So now he's signed with Dallas. They signed him for a $2 million deal for next year, which I guess is a pretty good price for a goalie of his experience. So it's like these four or five different goalies, they just move around and somehow they wind up here for a period of time and then someplace else. And sometimes, like a boomerang, they come flinging back. And that's the case with Vitek Vanecek. You know, it's where's Ron Lowe? Remember Ron Lowe in the early days? Bernie Wolf, the Jewish goalie from the Capitals. He got into investments and he did very, very well. But it's a strange situation when you watch what's going on with the hockey. Coming up, it was 43 years ago today, when even by Billy Martin and Yankee standards, this was a bizarre one. We'll talk about what happened on this day 43 years ago at Yankee Stadium as we continue. It's the Andy Pollin Hour, ESPN 630. It's Thursday, so I'm in for Tony from 11 to 12 today. I'll talk to Amber Theo Harris, who is a former sportscaster in this area, covered the Orioles for Comcast, Channel 4, NFL Network, and she produced a documentary about a year ago called The Weight of Gold, which she co-produced with Michael Phelps, who narrated it, and it's about mental health issues of athletes, particularly Olympic athletes. So I'm looking forward to talking to her about the documentary coming up at 11 o'clock, right after we start the show, the Tony Show, at 11 o'clock. Also, a couple of programming things. 1, 2 o'clock, Alex Ovechkin is going to talk about his new contract at a news conference, and we're going to carry that live here on ESPN 630, 2 o'clock. And that'll be followed at 3 o'clock by Bram Weinstein, live from training camp in Richmond, as he was there yesterday and will be there today and tomorrow. And Saturday is Fan Appreciation Day. If you're just jumping in your car, talk to Scott Abraham, who is there for Channel 7. And he said there are fans there. It's limited. They can't get autographs, but there is some semblance of fan normalcy, I guess, at training camp in Richmond. This is kind of a make good for them. The last year of the contract with Richmond was 2020, and obviously that didn't happen last year, so this is a good faith thing that they didn't collect any money from Richmond, and they're holding camp there for 4 days. So we'll get the latest from Bram on that coming up at 3 o'clock. Meantime, 43 years ago today, even by the old Billy Martin, George Steinbrenner standards, this was bizarro. Let me set this up. Now, you know how many times Martin was in and out with the Yankees. I'll chronicle all that coming up shortly. But he was hired on Old Timers Day in 1975 to manage the Yankees. Old Timers Day was originated, I believe, by the Yankees, and they would bring back old players, and they play an exhibition game, an inning or two, before a regularly scheduled Saturday afternoon game. I actually went to a couple of these when I was in New York covering the teams, and Joe DiMaggio would show up, all the big names, Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra. I mean, the royalty of the Yankees would be there. And Billy Martin was a beloved player, but he was beloved as a manager, too, for Old Timers Day in 1978 because he had been the manager of the World Series champion the year before. He had taken them to the World Series in 1976 when they were swept by the Reds, and the following year he came back and he beat the Dodgers to give the Yankees a World Series title. But as things had happened with Martin, he ran into problems, and he ran into problems with his star player, Reggie Jackson. And during the 1978 season, in June, late June of 1978, he got into it with Reggie Jackson during a game. And when the game was over, he said, and this is one of the most famous Billy Martin quotes ever, he said, "The two of them," meaning Steinbrenner and Reggie, "the two of them deserve each other." He said, "One's a born liar, the other's convicted." And that was kind of the end of Billy there, as a day or so later, he resigned as manager of the team. But only a month later, here it is, Old Timers Day, a deal has been worked out to put Billy Martin back in the dugout as the manager of the Yankees. Bob Lemon is the manager. This is 1978, so it's July 29th, 1978. Yankees are defending World Series champions. It's Old Timers Day, and the late, great Bob Shepard on the PA had this announcement introducing Billy Martin.
Introducing and announce at the same moment that the manager of the Yankees for the 1980 season, and hopefully for many years after that, will be number one, Billy Martin.
So, and the fans are holding up signs, you know, "Bring Billy back. Billy, you'll always be number one. Reinstate Billy Martin." It was a 7-minute ovation for that. And if you listen to that carefully, here it is, 1978, a little more than halfway through the 78 season, and the announcement is in 1980. So it's another season and a half before Martin returns and becomes manager of the New York Yankees. Bob Lemon, you're on the clock. You know, you doesn't matter what you do. If you win the World Series in 78 and 79, you're out. And Billy Martin is coming back. Well, it doesn't take much to figure out that things didn't go well from the beginning. They won the World Series in 78, by the way. They did repeat as series champions with Bob Lemon as the manager, but given his lame duck status and the impatience of George Steinbrenner, they couldn't wait, and Billy Martin comes back in 1979. He's back as the manager. The team finishes in fourth place, and after the season is over, Billy Martin gets in a fight in a bar with a marshmallow salesman. I do not make this up. You can Google this. He got in a fight in a bar with a marshmallow salesman. That was the end of Billy after the 1979 season. Comes back for 1983. 1983, what is that best known for? Why, that's the Pine Tar game with George Brett. Billy actually did pretty well with that team. They finished in second place. Not good enough. He's out at the end of the 83 season. Yogi Berra takes over. Yogi manages them in 1984, and he's on the job in 85, and even though they didn't make the postseason the year before, George Steinbrenner says, yes, Yogi's going to manage the whole year. That lasted about a month and a half. And Billy Martin was back as manager in 1985. That was the season where, at the Cross Keys Hotel in Baltimore, he got drunk and got in a fight with his pitcher, Ed Whitson, broke his arm, and that led to Billy being out one more time. He comes back in 1988, and again, he gets in a bar fight. He is replaced during the season by Lou Piniella, and that is it, although he died on Christmas Day of 1989, and there were reports that Steinbrenner had already arranged that Martin would return yet another time as manager. He died at the age of 61. It was a drunk driving crash. It was they said that Billy wasn't driving the car, but there's reason to believe that that wasn't necessarily the case. It was a guy by the name of Bill Reedy who took the hit for it. He said he was driving, and that was that. But I mean, that is just the Bronx Zoo. That is the way that things operated during the 1970s and into the 1980s with George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin. And you know, here's a guy in George Steinbrenner who financed plays. He liked to be in the center of things. He also had a football mentality. And Billy Martin kind of had that for baseball. Billy was getting in fights all the time, and George loved that. He thought in order to have a good baseball team, you got to have a fiery manager. You got to have a manager who's willing to drop the gloves at any time. And Billy was willing to do that, mostly with Reggie Jackson, who he feuded with throughout his various runs as manager of the team. So just an incredible moment, and it happened 43 years ago today as Billy Martin trotting it out there for Old Timers Day, getting ready to join the other Yankee legends as a player, and it's announced, oh, yes, and he's coming back to manage the team. Not this year, not next year, but the following year. And what do you know, even though the Yankees win the World Series, he's back one more time. Hey, speaking of crazy stories, see this one? This is from Pete Thamel of Yahoo. This is an exclusive that he had. And it just goes to show you what is now happening in college football, how quickly things are ramping up, where you have the name, image, and likeness to the point where Nick Saban says that his quarterback, who's yet to start a game, has deals in place that could pay him close to $1 million this year. That's a guy who's been in college for a year and is going to be the starting quarterback for Alabama. According to Pete Thamel, you have a quarterback in high school, Dallas suburb, South Lake Carroll. His name is Quinn Ewers, E-W-E-R-S. He has 82,000 Instagram followers. He's rated the number one recruit in the country, has a verbal commitment to play at Ohio State. He's still got another year of high school. He's going into his senior year of high school. He is strongly considering giving up that senior year to go play at Ohio State next month. Actually, next week, because they open up camp. Their preseason camp opens up next week, because he has the potential of earning nearly $1 million. A local company called Holy Kombucha is among those offering him a deal. There are several others, including national brands. Could he do this in high school? In some states, yes. In Texas, you can't. Texas has legislation that says he can't do this in the state. Otherwise, he would play his senior year of high school and maybe make $1 million. That's how things are working right now. His parents, Curtis and Kristen, made it clear that their preference would be that Quinn stays in high school and is allowed to sign the deals, but that doesn't seem available. That's not going to happen in the state of Texas. So how does he go from entering his senior year of high school, here it is late July, how does he go from that to next week showing up in Columbus, Ohio, and competing for the starting quarterback job? Doesn't he have to graduate, you say? Yes, he does. Well, he's been taking an English course online that he can choose to either graduate from or not graduate. And if he doesn't, he can go back to school for his senior year of high school. If he clicks the right box, which says, yes, I want to get the credit for this class, he graduates. He's through. He's through with high school, shows up on the campus, and the three guys who are competing for quarterback job at Ohio State, the three scholarship quarterbacks, none of them have thrown a college pass. They have not played at all. So he could conceivably step in there as a kid who was supposed to be playing his senior year of high school, win the starting job, You know, it's Trevor Lawrence was he graduated from high school and, you know, went through the full summer practice. I don't know, probably went through spring practice, that's the way they do it now. But whatever it was, I mean, he became the starting quarterback like three or four games into his freshman year on a team that was defending national champions. So it's possible that happens at Ohio State. And the fact that they have this kind of flexibility to do that is amazing. Now, he's almost playing at a college level now. South Lake Carroll plays its home games in a stadium that seats 12,000 people, costs $15 million to build. Let me tell you, I spent 6 years working in Texas. High school football is king. It is king. This is a suburb of Dallas. That's a big city, and that's how big it is. In the smaller towns, they don't have stadiums that size, but they're the professional team. That's what people live for. Friday night lights. That's it. And here's a kid who could either do that at a stadium that seats 12,000 people, a $15 million stadium, or he can go to the big horseshoe at Ohio State, play quarterback there, and make $1 million in endorsements. Does the family need it? Heck no. The father, Curtis Ewers, works in the oil and gas business, and his mother is a fourth grade teacher in the South Lake system. His father says, "We don't need the money, it's just the principle of it." What principle? There are no principles. The principle is the principle. It's the principle, the money, the amount of money that you can make. And here we are, what, a month since the Supreme Court decision? That you can have name, image, and likeness rights, and you can make money off the field, and it is ramped up to the point, and you're seeing what's happening too with the conference realignment. It's a foregone conclusion now that the Big 12 is dead, and the commissioner of the Big 12 is now blaming ESPN for ripping them apart to create this super conference in the SEC. The money hustle right now that's going on is beyond belief. And if this is now a high school, well, technically not a high school senior since he hasn't started as a senior, a high school junior who's in this position to make $1 million or play another year of high school football, how far does this go? And how soon would others want to start the clock? You know, I guess, you know, if he can do this with one online English class and get that done at the end of this week, by tomorrow, today's Thursday, by the end of this week, pack up the car and head to Columbus, Ohio and compete for the starting job. Who's to say a kid who has a great sophomore year of high school says, well, gee, you know, why do I need to play high school football 2 more years and not make any money? I got Instagram followers. I got people telling me how great I am. I got Alabama recruiting me. I got Oklahoma recruiting me. I got Texas recruiting me. I got to play 2 more years with these suckers who are going to have to pay for their education. Most of them, they're not going to get college scholarships. What if I get hurt? Why do I want to do that before I get my money? So we may have potentially 15 and 16-year-old kids doing this. And the Supreme Court says this is perfectly kosher. It was unconstitutional the other way. It was a 9-0 decision, a complete shutout, that this is okay. But the model that we've operated under with college football and other college sports for 150 years, in a matter of a month, that's dead. That's been blown to smithereens. And this is just another example of it. A high school kid who can make $1 million or play his senior year for nothing. Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Coming up, Amber Theo Harris, who produced a documentary called The Weight of Gold about the mental strain that Olympic athletes go under, and that was produced last year. We'll talk about that and how it relates to Simone Biles and the other stories involving the Olympics as we continue. Tony Kornheiser Show next, ESPN 630.